Members, please keep cameras on during the meeting. Community members, guests, and staff, please keep cameras off during the meeting unless speaking. And all attendees, please keep mics muted unless called upon by the chair after raising your hand virtually. If you're calling in by a phone, you use star 6 to mute and unmute in the Zoom platform and star 9 to raise your hand. That's now we're in order. First item of business is to look back at the January 15th minutes, and I'm looking for a motion to approve, and I see one from Nan and a question from Nick. Let's start with Nan.
Sorry, I'm gonna just be Nan to the punch. I think was this related to your okay, yeah. Nan had offered a suggested edit prior to the meeting. I hadn't gotten around to making that, and it will get included in the minutes after this meeting. That will be the slides from our presentation in January.
Okay.
That said, I would like to move approval and noticed one other thing, which we can discuss if there's a second.
Second.
I think that was Alder. No, was that Chris?
I had Alder Evers on that.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought at first too. Okay, Nan, your other edit?
This is really a question. It looks like the minutes say that we approved at our last meeting, approved the minutes from September of 2024, but I'm pretty sure it was December.
Thanks, Nan. Nice catch. I will make that edit as well.
Yep. No worries. That's all I have.
Okay. And I think that I don't think we need to do a vote on the amendments, in that Nan made a motion for approval with that amendment. So I will assume unanimous consent on the approval of that minutes unless I see a hand for roll call vote. Seeing no hands. Those minutes are approved and in the public record, which if you missed that meeting, you can now see a link to that presentation. Now is the time for public comment. Do you have any public comments?
No written public comments.
Okay. And any disclosures or recusals? We're not voting on anything, but just as a reminder for next time, if we do vote for things, this is where you'd disclose or recuse reasons why you'd not vote or want people to know things about you before you voted, like your interests. Seeing nothing there, we'll move to new business, which, as a reminder, is where you would bring up things that you want to talk about next time at our next meeting. Can also email them to me or Nick Heckman. And we'll work on getting them into the agenda also if you're interested in moving things forward. Moving right along, we are ready for our special presentation, the update on food insecurity in Dane County, which, if you would like to read along, there's a PDF that was sent out ahead of the meeting. You can also just watch. Moving over to
All
you,
right.
Nick.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Nicholas. And I just wanted to share that Devico has planned to join this meeting, as she usually does, and as well as share this presentation. However, unfortunately, she came down with some illness today and had to rest up. So she's fully deserving of our support and recognition of her hard work on this effort. But I just wanted to make sure y'all knew that me presenting alone is not indicative of her lack of contribution. So yes, this effort and unfortunately Devika is not here because Devika has a great had a large role in the creation of this report update. So I originally created a Dane County food insecurity report back in 2016, and over the years, I found that a number of different groups were finding it on the internet and finding it on the public health website and putting it to use, including folks at the university and elsewhere. And in this council, some of you may recall that Devika actually, even before her current role with Second Harvest, had been asking about status of an update for quite some time. So a year ago, with her appointment to her new role as a data expert for Second Harvest of Southern Wisconsin, we decided that the time was right to collaborate on this update, and so I brought her in to do that. So if you'll give me a second to share my screen, I'd like to just share the report itself. And then I kind of, our intent had been to scroll through the report. This is available to members in the quorum email that I sent out earlier today or earlier this week. Unfortunately, it was not in the agenda, but if you need to find it online, you can search for Dane County Food Insecurity Report, and it's on the first page of results there. Okay, one moment. All right. Let's see. There's two documents you'll be able to find on the internet. One is a summary, which has about a 5-page shorter look at this report, and then the longer form, which I'm going to not read in its entirety, but I am going to scroll through this document because there's a lot of information in here that I want members of this council to be aware of. So, as we look through the report, it's structured into two sections. The first is, excuse me, as I kind of fly through here, and I apologize for any motion sickness that this creates as I scroll through this document. But the goals of the report are listed here up front, where first we wanted to provide an overview of food insecurity, how common this is occurring in our community, and its impact on the people of Dane County. And then secondly, some of you, I know Chris was involved in the Wisconsin Food Security Consortium years ago and is familiar with the four legs of a table food security model that came out of that work. And I have tried to keep alive through this report over the years. But I wanted to present that framework again and use it for understanding the different connections that we see in our community around food insecurity and what can be done to address it, as well as what is happening and where the barriers and challenges may exist. So, also worth noting that not only has food insecurity changed a lot since 2016, it's changed a lot since November 2024. And we're going to begin seeing things related to items in this report that could change significantly over the course of the coming year. So, Devika and I have also talked about a potential addendum to this report later this year, or potentially updating it again certainly on a more frequent schedule, but perhaps as soon as next year or the year after. All right. So, as we look through who is food insecure in Wisconsin and food insecure in Dane County, unfortunately, we know that food insecurity data from the U.S. Census Bureau is a bit delayed, and it lags in terms of how frequently we get that data. It's about a year and a half behind. So right now we're looking at 2023 data, where we can see that about 13.5% of Americans were food insecure. In Wisconsin, that was about 10.7% of households. And then switching to a different metric, the Map the Meal Gap data from Feeding America, we see that about 9.2% of all people and 12.6% of children were food insecure in 2022. So here on the right, you see the state of Wisconsin and all of our 72 counties, Dane County, how it stacks up relatively in the middle of the counties. Menominee County jumps out as the most food insecurity in the state, well over 20%. But in general, as you'll see, these numbers have continued to shift into greater and greater food insecurity over the last several cycles of data collection. Also important to note that food insecurity doesn't affect us all equally. If we disaggregate our household numbers of Dane County, Wisconsin, and the United States, we can see that while we have similar levels of food insecurity across white households, the Black and Latino households in Dane County and Wisconsin are significantly higher than their peers across the country. So, because of our composition, our racial composition of households in Dane County, we know that the variance in some of the challenges, the unique challenges faced by minority communities in our area may be masked by the population demographics that we're confronted with. One of the things we took a look at, because of this lag in food insecurity data coming out of the Census Bureau, food share also becomes a very valuable indicator, proxy indicator for food insecurity and hunger. So you see that, excuse me, this SNAP data, SNAP or food share in Wisconsin, there's a lot that comes out of our Department of Health Services on a month by month basis, and a profile emerges of who is food insecure or using these programs. Most food share participants being female, most of them are non-Hispanic or Latino. About 4 in 10 participants are children under the age of 18, and about 1 in 3 are white, with, as we mentioned, significant profiles of use by Black and African American and other race categories. So that's an interesting observation here, where we see that food insecurity data and food share usage may not match in the same way. Perhaps how white households are having greater access than some of the communities that could benefit at a greater rate. We go into the report to discuss trends in food insecurity nationally and in Wisconsin. We can see here on this chart that if you look back the last 25 years, food insecurity jumped significantly in Wisconsin, right around the start of the Great Recession. It declined for the next 15 years or so, and then jumped again at the start of the pandemic. I mean, we had just barely dropped below those levels from 2007. When the rise occurred at the beginning of the pandemic. The pandemic, of course, was a major game changer for food insecurity in our communities. But what many of us may recall from the beginning of the pandemic is the long lines at food pantries and food banks, the job losses, the unemployment benefits, the stock market crash, and so forth. And that had a tremendous immediate impact on people's ability to get food. But the other side of that story is the rapid government response that occurred. So stimulus money came out, the SNAP program was benefits were boosted, other programs were dialed up to increase flexibility for nutrition programs and so forth. And what we began to see is that over this chart covers the for second half of 2020 and into 2021, these programs actually measurably decreased food insecurity, and food insufficiency is how they were measuring at the time over that period. So the story here is that policy changes actually can have a measurable impact on food insecurity if we tailor them and target them to make the most impacts. Locally, we talked a little bit about food share. Here's what that looked like over time. So starting in 2018 to the present day, we see food share again jumped to match that food insecurity, excuse me, food share usage jumped at the start of 2020 and has kind of held steady ever since. And then we can also match that with our emergency food usage. And so Devika had access to some great data looking back over time at food distributed by Second Harvest, Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin, over the last 25 years. And you can see the steady increase, including the dramatic jump in 2020, 2021, and into the present day. Now, what I'll draw your attention to with these two charts is that we see more folks using the food bank and food pantry, and fewer, and not a steady rate of increase in food share usage over the same period. And so that could indicate that some people who are accessing the pantry are either unaware of their eligibility for food share. Maybe they are not eligible. That could be undocumented individuals or students or other populations that don't have access to SNAP benefits. But there is a clear opportunity gap here to serve more people with nutrition assistance that could then alleviate some of the pressure on our overburdened emergency food system. So that does, in fact, remain a safety net for us. Those populations, some data limitations, those very populations I just mentioned tend to be very tricky to measure. So I just wanted to draw that out that, some of this is bearing a need for greater and additional research, that we don't quite know everything about every group, but we can do our best to kind of draw some understanding based on all these different triangulating of all these different proxy data points. Devika and I went into much greater detail in this update on the health and social impacts of food insecurity. Second Harvest had created this great graphic, which really does a nice job of tying together some of the strategies around the connections between food insecurity, chronic disease, and then the types of income and spending trade-offs that can create a cyclical, a vicious cycle of negative reinforcing food insecurity. So these challenges are not uncommon for low-income folks, and certainly with the discourse around inflation and food costs and so forth that we've had in this country over the last several years, I think a lot of people may intuitively understand this stuff without having to see it spelled out, but it still is a connection that I think bears mentioning due to the great impacts on income and the kind of the continuous cycle that folks are stressfully confronted with. I'll move forward through some of this. One piece we've kept from the last report is the distinction between nutrition security and food security. So, those are some terms that do sometimes get conflated, and we wanted to compare them and offer an opportunity to see them as different. And then lastly, a discussion of some of the food as medicine trends that we've been seeing in our area. So the second part of the report, as I suggested, is our four legs of the table food security framework. And so here, with our handy dandy table icon, you can see these four table legs. And it's a table because, not only does a table hold up our food, it has to have all four legs working in unison in order for it to operate as effectively as possible. So our four table legs are economic security, the overarching economic context that contributes to our income, wages, personal finance, and ability to have enough money to spend on food, access to affordable and nutritious food, our nutrition assistance programs, and lastly, our emergency food system safety net. The goal of this model, in my mind, is really to help folks who operate. That could be folks in this council or our food access network. But some individuals may identify with an area of work that connects to one of these table legs, but not the rest. And it's valuable to help those individuals see the connections to the bigger picture. Somebody who works on living wage advocacy or on healthcare enrollment may not directly see themselves as part of a food security framework, but in fact, those funds that they're helping families to gain or save are money that would otherwise potentially be coming out of their food budgets. So it's all part of the household budget that families are drawing from and hopefully able to connect those dots for folks. The food pantry volunteer, for example, is another that we want to make sure understands the importance of those nutrition assistance programs that can help relieve pressure that they're seeing with their folks at the food assistance line. So we go through each of these legs in detail. I'll kind of scroll through these a little more quickly and you can review on your own. But in our economic security section, talking about the connections between food insecurity, poverty, SNAP participation. We look at inflation and the cost of goods across the country and somewhat in our area. Shifting to our second leg, access to affordable and healthy food. This is one that I think an area where this council, members of this council, will be quite familiar. We see area. We see our areas of low food access reflected here. So you may be familiar with this image of our food access improvement map that the City of Madison has produced which informs grant distribution for healthy retail access, as well as our seed grants. We go into a discussion, and this is something that is emerging in public health as a real connective thread for food insecurity conversation, is emergency preparedness, and something I think our food action plan will also be touching on as we move forward with that work. But thinking about how our food system can be resilient in the face of major challenges or shakeups like we saw in the at the state in the in, during the pandemic, for example. But it could also be a natural disaster or other event that kind of has a ripple effect across the entire network. How is our food system able to sh absorb that shock, or is it? And what kind of investments could be made to potentially, set us up for greater success in those conditions? So that's some questions I think that will be raised in this report, but potentially answered in that food action plan. Some local success stories we touch on, again, this council's work in the Healthy Retail Access Program and seed grants. We also included a discussion of non-traditional retail, including farmers markets, the importance of our Double Dollars program and the nutrition incentives that work there, the community-supported agriculture network that Dane County is so proud of over the last 20 years and has built out into a really successful model for some folks and families to find food. And then community and school gardens, another place where some families receive additional food. We have had in this council and certain presentations and work groups in the past to discussion, vast discussions about reducing food waste and the importance of that work, as well as Chris's efforts as part of Healthy Food for All and that key organization in our emergency food network. We touch on our nutrition assistance programs. SNAP, of course, is the big one. We provide some background here on SNAP, and again, I've already presented some of that data up front in this report. School meals is another that's pretty critical. Major institutions for feeding not just children, but the opportunity cost of those meals not having to come out of the family budget is pretty hard to under emphasize. Really, it's a critical anti-hunger program in this country. WIC is another, and then kind of a brief list of the some of the other nutrition programs available from the federal government for the time being. A little bit of a deeper dive into school meals, touching on our area and how Wisconsin compares to the rest of the country. And then lastly, we turn into our emergency food system, where we've had a bit of a discussion here on some barriers to emergency food access that families are touching on, are experiencing, local food sources for emergency food distribution, and then some of the opportunities as well that our feeding organizations, not just Second Harvest, but the pantries and meal sites and so forth that make up the network, provide. Here we go into a little bit further discussion around Dane Food Access Network, which I continue to see value in as kind of reflecting this four legs model to help connect individuals working in these areas to each other and help that collective impact and collaborative approach take off. So the conclusion, I will leave that for folks to read on their own. And I will go ahead and stop sharing and put myself on camera. But I did want to offer an opportunity to answer questions, also entertain discussion on this topic, obviously important to my work, but also all of our efforts. I hope you see your contributions to this council reflected in this report, as well as the pandemic food system study that came before it and the Dane County Food Action Plan, which will come after it. And these documents, I think, can really be foundational going forward to help us understand the conditions. Maybe this is a snapshot of a moment in time that will be very different in a year or four from now. And we will have more information and more work to do. So, thank you. Tag, I'd be happy to answer your question.
Well, first of all, I'm going to join my colleagues here, and I think everybody is going to say the same thing. What an incredible presentation, and thank you for all the hard work that went into it. And I look forward to diving into it in detail and probably coming back to you with questions. But I have three questions real quick, and I don't want to take up time from the others who also have questions. But in one of your earlier slides, you had three counties, one of them you identified as Menominee, but I'm afraid I don't know my Wisconsin geography sufficiently to be able to pick out the other two. And I was curious with the other two and if we have an understanding why they have such elevated levels of food insecurity. Do we know?
So that is a great question. The Menominee, the reason Menominee County is quite elevated, and I'll be honest, I think the other one of the others might be Adams County. I'm not quite sure. Let me share this so folks can see my screen again
I think
here.
I understand why Menominee would be
Yeah.
elevated, but I don't know. I'm curious about the other two.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't, not only do I not know the, can I not name these counties, other two counties off the top of my head? I don't know the answer to that question. I'll certainly look into it. I think it's a great query because they do jump out, and they,
Yeah,
you know,
they
I think
jump
they're.
out, and that they apparently, anyways, are rural counties.
Yeah.
And I think that that speaks to concerns that sort of run, they are arguably probably to get into politics, red counties, and yet high levels of food insecurity, which leads me to another observation slash question is that while there's a disproportionate, when you look at this broken out by race and ethnicity, food insecurity by race among Black households and Latino households, it just kind of shows the ability, the agency that white households have and the familiarity of being able to use the system. And I'm wondering if there are efforts or are there any, if there's an ongoing communication strategy to try to address maybe the fatalism of Black and Latino households who are struggling with food insecurity but aren't aware that there are resources available to help them out.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I know it has been a long sticking point of our emergency food partners to try to educate as many folks as possible that come through their doors about the availability of the programs that they're eligible for. And with so many folks in those, particularly in those two racial and ethnic minority populations being eligible for food share, it has definitely not gone uncommunicated through the typical partnerships in community organizations, as well as through our non-traditional kind of human service networks to try to get folks to sign up. It's been a challenge, I think, but one that I would hope there is continued effort to do, because as you say, really targeting messaging and outreach to get those folks, the support they are eligible for, not even just
I'm wondering
deserving,
if
it's
there's been
eligibility.
research at UW in the rural sociology department or an extension to try to understand that. I assume that someone has studied this and there's probably an answer. And there's
Yeah.
an effort along those lines, but I'd be curious to learning more. And lastly, and I hate to bring this up, you kind of made a reference in passing that that much of this is subject to arbitrary change and lots of uncertainty over the next 4 years. But do we have a sense of some immediate challenges, immediate threats to county resources? And pu that are coming through public health that we should know about.
The major public, excuse me, the major public health program, excuse me, excuse me. The major public health program that's dealing with food insecurity for families in Dane County is WIC. That's one that is a federal grant that is passed through by the state of Wisconsin and operated by our local health departments. There has been no indication of the WIC grant being in threat at this time, thankfully. With that said, what the Congress had, there's been congressional indicators that SNAP is on the potential, not necessarily chopping block, but editing block for this budget cycle through the budget reconciliation process or potentially through the farm bill if that gets passed. And some of the things I've seen floated for that would include the potential to roll back the increases to SNAP benefits that came through the Biden administration. There could be expanded work requirements to SNAP that we saw here in Wisconsin over the last 10 years, and that Governor Evers has kind of rolled back himself. So enhancements to that across the country, as well as potentially other things like drug testing and other eligibility changes that could make it less easy to receive benefits or less desirable to participate in the program.
Yeah, I
Other
appreciate that.
other funding, I don't think we have a clear understanding yet of what county or public health specifically funding sources could be at
Well, and
risk
I'll
during.
close with just a comment. You mentioned this, the four legs of this table, the economic security piece. I think as you know, as Section 8 vouchers get hacked back, as health insurance and perhaps the ACA gets trimmed back, that will, you know, that's essentially putting more pressure on the family wallet, which would mean less money. You know, as housing instability goes up, food insecurity will go up as well. As health insecurity goes up, food insecurity will go up as well. So it's a huge, huge challenge.
Absolutely. Thank you all, nervous. Nan.
Yeah, Alder Evers actually asked my sort of current events question, and thank you for bringing us up to date on that. But as someone who's been working on these kinds of policy issues for quite a while, it's really helpful to have this kind of a document coming between, the SIFT report that did the Dane County analysis last year and the year before, and this to feed into the food plan. So it's really much gratitude, and it looks beautifully presented and easy to digest. No pun intended. For folks who are really interested in this and the folks that we're trying to educate about these issues in Dane County and Wisconsin more broadly. So thanks very much for this work. It's really an important contribution.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. And I should mention again, we do not everyone is going to want to read the full 25-page document here. So we do have a short 4-page summary document. I'll make sure to link that in the meeting minutes so you can all have access to that. And if you want to distribute that, it has a QR code at the back for the full report if anybody is interested. Perhaps you'll want the full report at times, but in other formats, I think the shorter one may be preferred. Alder Vittiver.
Just in case folks weren't aware, the CSA Fair Share Coalition had their $500,000 federal grant rescinded. So that has already happened. So that's all.
Yeah, no, that's the first casualty is it's really a sad state of affairs that something and somebody made the point in an earlier conversation about this particular grant that the irony is that this is not affecting people that are intended to be harmed by this decision. It's affecting farmers who are trying to broaden their markets to sell into. So, more CSAs is good for farmers, and it's not an issue of some sort of culture war conflict. Thank you for that. Erica. Erica is one of our Dane County member guest members, for those who are unfamiliar.
Okay, I'm coming.
Oh,
I'm coming. I'm sorry. I'm coming.
So I know you said Menominee County was one of the counties that had a really high population of food insecurity, I believe, if I was reading that map correctly.
Yeah, that's my understanding. Alder Vitavarayse is maybe shaking at that, so I don't want to speak out of
No,
turn, though.
it was not Menominee. It was Outagamie, actually.
Outagamie.
Okay.
I think it's pretty close. I know that that region though, a general region though, has a lot a really large indigenous population. I believe it's really close to a tribal area, like Brown County, Outagamie, that area. And I do know that they were hit pretty hard as well. I did grow up north by Watersmeet, which has tribal land, and they really are hit hard with poverty during times of recession and things like that. So I just wanted to speak to that. So counties like Outagamie, Brown, Menominee, those areas are hit hard for some reason. There's probably a reason why Native Americans and Indigenous people are hit really hard during those times.
Yeah, thank you for saying that and sharing that. Those areas, those counties that you mentioned, all have do indeed have the high levels of food insecurity over the last, 15 years that I've been looking at this issue. They always come up. Menominee is coterminous with the tribal nation in that area, so that's why it tends to pop off on maps of poverty relative to the state of Wisconsin and other areas. But yeah, this is it's an important issue, and it's as we see when conditions change, like we saw with the pandemic or the Great Recession, the folks who are already at risk of being food insecure are the ones that are impacted the worst, first and worst. So thank you for that, Chris.
First of all, thank you, Nick and Davika. Wonderful report. I printed it off on Monday when you sent it out and I've already devoured it. So appreciate it. Love having it at my fingertips as well because it's very useful. No other place to report this in this meeting, so I'll just report it here because it seems to be part of the discussion. I am also on the FEMA board for Dane County. FEMA is every county in the United States gets a certain set of dollars of FEMA dollars that they can bring in for emergency food, shelter, and rent assistance. And so there's a annual allocation of those dollars. I'm on the board. It's basically a granting committee. We put on an RFP. We get applications back, and then we dole out the money. And so normally that is done this time of year. We had our FEMA board meeting last week. Introduced ourselves, talked about the state of things. So I appreciate having this report also for that. But then we had to adjourn the meeting because they don't know if there's going to be FEMA dollars right now or not. And so there was no point in having any further discussion until they found out. And it's in Dane County, it's administered through United Way. They were talking to a FEMA administrators higher up and just could not get any answers. So that's where that lies. It's not a ton of money, but it is. It's direct money for purchase of food, for food pantries and food banks, and rent assistance, and it's shelter support. So.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Chris.
Oh, sorry, Nick. I'm being bad. I'll just call it myself. My question, maybe better news. In the report, there was the 2024 State of Wisconsin dollars that in the report it said might provide more funding for double dollars and nutrition incentive programs. Do you know the status of that?
Yeah, so there was some funding passed through the legislature last year for a statewide nutrition incentive programs, and part of the intent of that funding would be so that DHS had opportunities to match federal grants. So there's a big nutrition incentive grant through USDA called the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program, or GUSNIP. And in the past, we have been unable to easily develop match funding for that. So I think one of the theories was that this statewide funding being available could potentially be leveraged to bring in additional federal funds to Wisconsin to do nutrition incentives. So I think it's I want to say it's $500,000 available for the state to use on this project. But as we've been discussing, we don't know the future of federal grants coming out of the USDA, whether that will go on a normal cycle, if it'll be happening at all. So there may be funding statewide that's distributed through that available state funds just to local projects. Whether Dane County would be eligible or recipient of some of that, given our existing program is pretty well established relative to some of the more emerging programs elsewhere in the state, I don't know. I guess the opportunity does continue that we could be, there could be more state funds available. So the other side of that is now that the funding is in the governor's budget, I think he actually did a share that it's included as an annual appropriation in his budget announcement yesterday. That's easier for the legislature to boost that funding in the future when that line item is already in the budget rather than developing it from scratch. So hopefully those funds could be boosted and grown over time.
Any other questions for Nick? Well, I'll just say, thanks, Nick and Devika, for putting this together. Thanks, Nick, for presenting it all by yourself. And thanks to the Dane County people for coming to hear the report at the same time. Efficiency in government. And also, I mean, you can leave when you want. But I think since I'm in charge, I'll just say that I think you're supposed to go to your Dane County meeting now. And moving on to the next item, which is
Sorry,
the.
Nicholas,
Oh, I'm
the
sorry.
extension folks wanted to just make an announcement about the
Okay,
transition, I
yes,
think.
sorry.
That's okay. I just did a bad job of it last time. So I just, So for Dane County Food Council folks who are on, we're going to log off of this meeting and then log on to the invite that you get in your email and see you in a few minutes. So good to see you on the PC.
Thanks, Jess. And now it's me. I have lost my update, but I know that the first part is to thank Dustin Lunt for his service to the Madison Food Policy Council as the Madison Metropolitan School District. He's been replaced by another person from the school district. Had I did it right
Yeah,
down.
that'll be Josh Perkins.
Okay, awesome. Thank
He's the
you.
director of our department.
And yeah, thanks for your dedication to this council over the years. And we do have, so yeah, aside from Josh, we do have a couple other people, or we have, I know one other person joining the council. And we are always looking for more people. Like we can, well, not all, we can't just have infinite number of people on the council, but we have a couple of vacancies. We can always have waiting lists and alternates. So yeah, if you know anyone interested in getting engaged with their food system, have them reach out. And yeah, seems like I deleted the rest of my update, but I think that was all of it. So now to the regional, now to our regular business reports, which first of which is the regional food system planning.
Chair, you have a hand.
Sorry. Thank you. Too many windows. I have a hand from Nan. Nan?
Just a quick reminder, I think you were planning to let the council know that the priorities discussion that we had in January has not been forgotten, and we'll be thinking about how to bring that back to the council in a useful way in March.
Thank you, Nan. I don't know how my notes got screwed up. That was the other thing. So thank you. Yeah. I don't need to add anything. Nan remembered exactly what I was gonna say. Okay. Regional food system planning.
Yeah, Noah unfortunately couldn't be here as well tonight. So I'll just share that there is an event, a soft launch of the regional food system plan, the outreach process, which is going to be occurring at Madison College next Thursday, February 27th. All of you are invited. I would hope you received that communication from Noah in the last couple of weeks. If you haven't, just ping me and I can forward you the contact or the invite for that. But the goal of the conversation, the goal of the event will be to just introduce the food system plan to folks and gather around food and drinks and have a little bit of opportunity to discuss some of the strategies and goals that could emerge from our plan.
Thanks, Nick. Any questions there? Okay. I'll move to the Regional Ag and Food Sovereignty Working Group, which we didn't have a meeting, sort of part with that discussion to follow up from the reflection on priorities and goals from January meeting. We're sort of working on getting all of that in a row in terms of scheduling. I do know that Nan has continued to work with the city to update their city leases per our priorities for, sorry, leases for agricultural land owned by the city. Thanks, Nan. And Dane Food Access Network.
Beyond what I already shared tonight, I just wanted to reinforce that the food banks and food pantries are obviously very closely following everything that's happening, and they understand, very, very clearly what the impacts of changes to nutrition programs are on their service, and how hard it is to continue to meet the needs of our community when they have fewer resources to do so. So keep them in mind among many others who are being impacted by all the various reports that are coming out these days.
Thanks, Nick. Farmland preservation, Nan?
Yeah, hi. I can say a little bit more about of an update from the city staff. They finally updated the lease language for the agricultural lands owned by the city as RAFs requested in January of 2022. So we're making headway. But the leases for the 2025 growing season will be under their current terms because they have a holdover provision, and those farmers are entitled to stay on one more year under the old terms. A resolution is going to be introduced to the Common Council on March 11th to approve the changes in the new leases. Presumably, those are the leases that will begin in March in the 2026 growing season. And staff will be contacting the farmers they've been working with to discuss whether they're amenable to the proposed new lease. And in language from staff, per the mayor, lease terms are going to remain on an annual renewal basis as some of these lands may be moved to food production. And I can't say more about that right now, but hopefully we'll hear more. I would say this update signals progress on a long-standing issue, and the mayor's interest in growing food on city-owned land is encouraging.
I agree.
Happy to answer any questions,
Yeah.
but I don't know much more.
Thanks, Ed, for your update and for the work. Okay, Dustin, one more time. Madison Metropolitan School District.
No update from the district, but thanks to everyone. Enjoyed my time on the council. So yeah, continue the good work you guys are doing. It's appreciated.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
Thanks,
Dustin.
Dustin.
Back to you, Nick, if you had anything more on the, I guess you probably, sorry, double dollars. You can say what you want.
Yeah, double dollars, same boat as everything else. I mean, double dollars is obviously attached to SNAP inherently. So, if people are pushed away from using that program, it would create a need to identify new ways to match folks for potential nutrition incentives. So, among many other considerations. But no particular updates as the market season is kind of in hiatus and the program is at the co-op right now.
Thanks, Nick. Community gardens update, same as the last 2 months, which is that we're doing a sort of community garden organizer summit March 8th, which you can go to the link that's in your notes for, or last month's notes, actually. And that now is the time to register for community gardens, or at least start bothering your local community garden organizer about it. And you can go to danegardens.net to find a contact information for your community garden organizer, if you want a plot to grow things on. I think, yeah, no questions there. So food systems assessment, which
It's a Lindsay report, and she's not available tonight, so no report.
you got anything from George from the business development specialist?
Nothing this time.
Okay. And then, yeah, it's still you.
Back to me. You're hearing a lot from me tonight, folks. So, in terms of our public health work, I just wanted to remind the other side of public health. That is communicable disease prevention. Obviously, there's a lot of illness going around right now. As Alder Evers takes the opportunity to sneeze on camera, it was perfect timing. I don't think we could have planned that any better. But folks, take care of themselves. Not only should you take care of yourselves, the people you work with, the organizations you serve, the keeping our volunteers and our community serving organizations operating safely and healthfully is our goal in public health. So, wanted to remind folks of the availability of our respiratory illness dashboard, which may have a greater need to be used if federal surveillance is changed in any way in the future. Alder Evers?
I did test positive for COVID this morning after flying home from Nashville on Sunday night, apparently sitting next to someone who was sick, and I wasn't masked up. So maybe it's a reminder to folks that COVID is still out there and that when you're in enclosed spaces, it's best to mask up. Even if you're the only one on the plane that's doing so, it's better to be safe than sorry. This is unfortunately, the fourth time I've had COVID in the last year, so I must apparently be a magnet to this virus in some way. But so, anyways, mask up, folks.
Sorry to hear that. Feel better.
Dan?
Yeah, sorry to hear that, Tag. I am often the only one masked up on the airplane. But that didn't spare me from a respiratory virus over the holidays. It wasn't COVID, but it was something else. I do have a question for Nick, though, about whether you're getting any indications on avian flu.
Yeah, right now we're still, the CDC is still tracking avian flu. I say right now, because I truly have no idea how this is going to go. The level of incident command and that unrolled in during COVID-19, I would expect to not see the same level of infrastructure involving another pandemic response. However, we are getting clear communication from not just our federal partners at CDC and in the USDA, where some of the livestock work is undertaken, but also here in the state between DHS and DACCAP, who manage some of those circumstances. So, for example, if a animal were to test positive on a dairy farm or poultry farm, there would be a lot of communication that would come through those entities as well as Public Health Madison Dane County about that incident. So nothing to report, thankfully, in that regard, although there have been a few human transmission cases in the state of Wisconsin that have made the news.
Bird to human, not human to human, right?
Yeah, animal to human, not human to human.
Right, yeah. I can do extension if you want. This is from Jess. Dane County is currently accepting applications for the 2025 Pi Food Project grant, which is, I don't need to editorialize. The total funding is to be granted is 40,000. They're due Monday, February 24th. So a little bit more time than the seed grant. The Food Entrepreneurship Ecosystems Development Initiative, which are the FEED webinars, our free virtual spring 2025 workshop series for new and growing food and farming businesses. These are organized by the UW Madison Extension Community Food Systems Program and will be held on Mondays, 2 to 3 p.m. from February 10th to March 17th. For more details and how to register, visit the website that's in the link or search for FEED webinars. And you can always find all of the upcoming educational events at dane.extension.wisc.edu. No questions, because I don't know more than that. I'm excited about those FEED webinars, so. Okay, that is our agenda. Are there any announcements? And if there's no announcements, are there anyone that wants to adjourn? Eddie, you have to say
yes,
a motion
to adjourn.
Second the motion to adjourn.
Thanks, we're adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Beat you, Chris.